The last time America had an updated farm bill was 2 years before the pandemic. Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The Agriculture Improvement Act of 2018 features commodity support programs and federal crop insurance, and a safety net like this helps farmers withstand all kinds of volatility, economic, political, climate. But experts say that safety net is not meeting the needs of today's farm families. In South Dakota, around 33% of acres are eligible for the largest commodity support programs. That's according to the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. That leaves a whole lot of people out, including young and upcoming farmers. Doug Somke leads South Dakota Farmers Union. I talked with him about the farm bill, listening for solutions, and what's next for right to repair.
Well, first of all, we haven't had a new farm bill since 2000. I'm trying to remember the year now. It's been so long. But it's been a while. All we've ever done is just reinstated the former farm bill, right? Yeah. I mean, we've never really discussed or debated or looked into what we can do differently or new. And that's really the problem. And recently in the BBB in July, they split up the farm bill, basically. We didn't address anything to do with conservation and or SNAP, but we did address updates for reference prices, and that which was important because we've been dealing with the old prices since we established the farm bill. And you can't do that. You can't use old numbers from way back when with inflation and everything else, cost of living. And we're just in a different world today.
Yeah.
Our fertilizer costs are up. All our inputs are up. Our expenses are much higher. Rents are higher. Land prices are higher. We needed something, more updated, which was good. But the safety net is the real problem right now. We don't have a decent safety net. And South Dakota Farmers Union, our membership, stepped forward several years ago recognizing this problem. I mean, this is nothing new. This is nothing from the recent administration. This has been going on for several administrations, that the safety net has not been good. Thus, the reason for things as ad hoc disaster payments and everything.
Mm.
And what we'd really like to see is a different method of causing farmers to not have the problem of falling below cost of production. So we came up with a program we call IMSET. It's Inventory Management Soil Enhancement Tool. This is nothing new. I mean, it's a new concept per se, but it's nothing new to what we've tried to do in the past. I mean, we've had grain reserves in the past. We've had different methods that come basically to the same conclusion. But what IMSET does, it approaches it from the fact of when you're going to plant, what your market will be when you harvest. So it's not just on the, a reserve or a government loan for your crops that you can pay off later, that kind of thing.
It's inventory management soil
enhancement tool.
Enhancement tool. And it's like a, it's what? What exactly is it? Like a.
Yeah, it's basically a safety net. It's the safety net that allows farmers to set their reference price. Every farmer is different, right? Every farmer's needs are different. Some people might not even use this program, and that's the whole point. We want to see market prices that don't need to be used for this farm bill.
So it's a policy proposal, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. It's a safety net that would, basically at some point replace a PLC and ARC.
Okay. I see. Yeah.
And so that's where we're at. And we had the North Dakota State University study it, and the ag economists there study it, Frayne Olson. And then we had Texas, we just had Texas A&M, Joe Outlaw, who's been in the business of ag economy for over 40 years. So he's been dealing with ag bills or farm bills for a long, long time. And his conclusion is the same as ours, that this is a tool that could be useful. And we have to do something different because the current policy is not working. Yeah. Them are his words, not mine. Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess if you're listening to, you know, to the experts, you know, we have something here. And it's based on where these numbers are based on is on an updated basis. Right now, many crops have an outdated basis. In South Dakota, we have producers that have base acres for wheat or for alfalfa, those type of things, oats, barley, and they haven't had that in their rotation or in their plan for production for many, many years. And this would update those okay. numbers. We can't continue to operate on 20, 30 year old numbers.
So updating the numbers, looking at new policy ideas at the very least, and studying those rigorously to see how they would work. How about building, you know, the political capital or the coalition? Tell me a little bit about what kind of traction you think you might have in Washington. Are people listening to the pain that farmers are going through and the call for re-envisioning of the safety net?
Yeah, that's a good question. On a regional scale, we've had really good reception to our plan. But when you get to the southern states, they don't quite understand it quite as well. And you got to remember, every area operates differently. Every crop is differently subsidized. Mm-hmm. It seems to be that the southern states, rice, cotton, and peanuts, are, you know, something that's more effective to them. And they're used to, you know, their bankers, their farming system is used to payments from the government, subsidies from the government, not necessarily a plan like ours. And so it's taken some time to, get a foothold of understanding. And I think here's the key. And I think that's something that has to be done, not only in agriculture, in politics, but in politics as a whole, and that is to use the facilities that the good Lord gave us in equilibrium to what we have. We have one mouth and two ears, so let's listen more than we talk. And I think that would help a lot of things for a lot of ways. And I've learned that personally myself. So in D.C., there's interest, but nobody wants to change, right? I mean, and one of the things that we find that would be helpful is, you know, remember the Doge movement, right? I mean, when this administration first came in and the things they're trying to do with cut, this program that we have developed would help with that. It would limit the amount of government subsidies. It would, more of it would come from the marketplace. And we truly believe that there'd be some psychological change to the marketplace as well, because the markets wouldn't know exactly what farmers were going to do because everyone's going to do it differently. Right now, they know immediately. As soon as we report our crop insurance acres, they know immediately what things are going to look like or shake out to be close to anyway. So then they take advantage of us. And farmers are the one industry that are not like anything else. This is why we call this the inventory management, right? I mean, Ford, Chrysler, John Deere, International, you name any equipment or any manufacturer that sells anything, they set the price, right? Farmers don't set their price. They're price takers, not price makers. And we need more control of our inventory. Mm-hmm. And that's what this program does. John Deere quit making combines because they couldn't sell any or weren't selling any because of the cost and the loss of markets for us. So why would we continue to grow more beans and corn and wheat and whatever when we're already overproducing? This is our biggest problem, and if you want to talk about America first, which we should, we got to find more ways to use those commodities. And I think, in South Dakota, we've got a good example of that with all the ethanol plants that we have in the state. Look what that's done for us over the years. And also now with the bean plant up in Aberdeen, the AGP plant, and also the recent one down in Mitchell. We need more of that. We also need more use in our some people call it biofuels. I call it renewable fuels. And the reason I like to use renewable fuels is because then we're talking about the stuff that farmers are actually producing. Sometimes it comes down to the fact that if you call it biofuels, I mean, you could count renewable or reused oils that we're shipping in a lot from China right now today. And that wouldn't necessarily be America first.
So, how urgent for the family farmer is policy change right now? Because I think there's a sense that, it's always been like this, and the pressures are high. But the subsidies or the bailouts or the emergency money will come. I'm wondering, when you're in an operation, though, do you feel like you're being taken care of and that's going to be okay? Or is the pressure really intense for family farmers to say, like, every year could be your last year?
Yeah, there's a lot of farmers that feel that way. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, when you don't have control of what your product is being sold for, that really puts a lot of stress on the family farmer. And the same thing goes for your cost of inputs. I mean, you don't have control of what, your chemical is going to cost, your fertilizer is going to cost. I mean, you get some, right? I mean, you get offers, that if you buy it now and pay for it by then, you can adjust some of that cost. But on the grand scheme of things, you don't. It's not like when I first started farming 30 some years ago, where you could keep your seed. Right now, very few farmers keep seed. Because they can't, according to the agreement with the companies that they're using their seed of, that they have sole propriety of that product, and therefore you can't keep it and replant it for the next year. And that's a huge difference than what it used to be like.
Okay, so you can't keep your seed, you can't set your own prices, you can't fix your own equipment.
And
And
by the way, we're working on that. We're
yeah,
in South Dakota. We're working on that.
tell me
So,
a little bit about right to repair and the progress on that then.
sure. Well, I can't tell you a lot about the details because we're trying to keep, on both sides, between the dealers and the manufacturers and us, the farmer rancher. We want to respect each other, and when we get something done, we'll introduce it, when it's finally taken. But it's Here's the thing. Again, we got in the room together and learned a lot about each other on what we want and what we don't want and what we see as workable. And I'm very confident that we're going to have something that's going to be helpful for not only us but also for the dealerships as well. And so it's been a really good work in progress. And I'll guarantee by this legislative session, we're going to have something that's going to be ready. Now, will it say that the manufacturers or the dealers are going to embrace us wholeheartedly? That's not what we're expecting. We are expecting that they'll work with us. That's what we're expecting. So, and we're that's what we're trying to do with them is work with them as well. So.
And there might be a state legislative proposal. Is that what I do I understand that correctly?
Yes, that's our plan.
Yeah.
And from the latest one that we've seen in DC, the national one, ours is better. So, I mean, I'm very optimistic that what we have, if we can get it passed through and signed by the governor, that this could be a national format that people could follow and get implemented. So
Are there other things that you've noticed in 2025, either, you know, after the government shutdown or through the particular harvest that you've had, that highlight an issue that you really think needs focus? Anything else come to mind?
Well, this is something that's been a concern of mine for a long, long time, is the fact that we just have to do better getting young people interested and into production agriculture. Right now in agriculture, the best place to be for making money in agriculture is be the one that's farming the farmer. And that's the wrong place to be. We've got to put more emphasis on that the farmer and the rancher are the ones that should be making, you know, the bigger share of that marketplace, not the processor, not the chemicals or seed or fertilizer salesman or agronomist. I mean, just there's so many services that we rely on as farmers and ranchers for help. But they're the ones that, you know, not saying that they're getting rich, but they're also, you know, they're doing pretty good. And they like seeing government payments because they know the farmer is going to get something. And usually when that happens, the farmer doesn't keep anything. It just goes right on through their hands to, you know, the bankers and you know, all the other entities that are, you know, helping the farmer make a product. But we have to be, you know, there's been several different attempts to get younger people involved. I mean, FFA does a great job, 4-H does a great job, SDSU, all our ag entities do a great job trying to do the same thing. But the best way you're going to get people into agriculture as young people is to make it profitable. If there's no money to be made in it, if you can make a better living, you know, being a agronomist than being a farmer, you're going to do that. And I'm not downplaying that. I'm just saying that, you know, without the farmer getting younger, we're in a deep problem here, not only as a state, but it's a national security issue. And I think, you know, the tariffs that have been placed have brought that kind of to light, right? I mean, and some of the things that have been done to address the, you know, the cattle industry. I mean, we've got cattle on our farm, and thank God we do, because otherwise the numbers at the end of the year here aren't going to look so good. But, you know, just the recent tweets that the president put out about Argentina were very harmful. And it didn't necessarily hit the sale barn as much as it did the contracts and Chicago Board of Trade.
What needs to happen to recover from that?
Well, the best thing we should do is have country origin labeling reinstated like we had back in the previous farm bill to the one that we're operating under now. You know, that was removed because we were worried about WTO. Well, I don't know. When you say WTO today, it's been so long since they have been anything of worthy to talk about. Most people don't even know what that acronym stands for. So, you know, I mean, is that something that we need to be cognizant of? Yeah, I think so to some degree. But we don't talk about the, you know, back in the day, there was a red box, an amber box, and a green box for, you know, WTO compliant. And that's one thing we did try to address, you know, our concerns for our IMSET program, that it was WTO compliant. Mm-hmm. And that's one reason that we originally wanted to go with actual acres, but when we decided to do the updated base acres, that put us into the WTO compliant. So
okay,
whatever that means, right?
Well, you know, when it comes to policy, the details matter, right?
Yeah, that's well, you got that right.
Doug Somke is president of South Dakota Farmers Union. Next week, we'll talk with Scott Vanderwall with South Dakota Farm Bureau. That's our conversation for today. I hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.